Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends. You're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist, and you can find us online at speculist.com. That's speculist.com. Or you can go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we talk about emerging technologies and emerging possibilities. We talk about the future, and we're not afraid to give the straight scoop about what's happening in the world and what we think is going to be happening in the world. And the straight scoop is that the sky is not falling, and if you're really willing to look at the evidence, we live in a world that might just be getting better all the time. Moreover, we believe we stand on the brink of an incredibly bright future, if we play our cards right, a future that most of us haven't even imagined, much less dared to hope for. But it's a future that we're all very much going to want to live to see. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
I'm super fantastic. How are you doing?
Oh, great. Very good.
Good. Well, I'm psyched about the program that we've got lined up tonight. We've got.
Yeah.
You know, we always say we got a fun show, but tonight, I mean, we've got no excuse for it not being a fun show. Am I right?
Absolutely. Our theme tonight will be fun. So, I mean, quite literally. So. How can you not have fun if you're talking about fun? So
if we can't have fun with this, we just got to pack it in, man.
That's right.
That's all there is. But I want to kick it off. I will first want to say hi to our chat host, Michael Darling, who's laying a little bit low this evening, but perhaps he'll come on just long enough to say hi.
Evening, gents.
Michael, glad to have you with us here, laying low. We won't bother you. You man the chat room. We believe he had a little more fun over the weekend than he could handle, so we're giving him kind of a hall pass tonight, would you say, Stephen? Is that
that's what we're going to do. But Mike, feel free to chime in when you feel like it.
Of course, as always, you know, feel free to jump in with witty, incisive comments at any time, or if you're figuring why start tonight. No, I don't know why I'm picking.
That's
Headley.
Man.
Very nicely done. Well done. Okay, we got in on that Headley. So. What I want to do before we get into our overarching topic, which is the fun future and the future of fun, is we got a few fun topics that we want to cover ahead of time. And the first thing I want to do is hit a couple of our regular features, which we've not done much with over the last few weeks. So I want to actually have a kind of an interesting sort of a back-to-back of our Tales of the Paranormal followed by our Astounding Science Facts, and I've actually got a story that bridges both of those. As Michael had pointed out in email this morning, I looked at it and I said, you know, that's really what's going on here, is we have a story that begins as a tale of the paranormal and ends as an Astounding Science Fact. So let's begin, Stephen, with a journey into the unknown with a little feature we like to call
Tales of the Paranormal.
And this story actually takes us back to, I believe it was in December. Yeah, I'm looking at this. It was December of 07, so about 6 months ago. And I found this iteration of this story on the BBC News website. So this is not coming as some of our previous tales of the paranormal from paranormalnews.com or from Pravda or one of those super reliable sources. This is from the BBC, okay?
Okay.
And the headline is, UFOs exist, says Japan official. Did you hear anything about this story when it broke back in December, Stephen, by any chance?
No, but if he's being literal, then, yeah, of course UFOs exist. But,
right, but I think he's saying more than that.
All right.
Clearly there are objects flying around that we haven't identified. But
Right.
Yeah, here's the story. Japan's chief government spokesman has announced that unidentified flying objects, UFOs, exist. Earlier, in response to a question from an opposition lawmaker, the Japanese government issued a statement saying it could not confirm any cases of UFOs. So I believe the term here must be in
flying saucers or whatever.
Yeah, flying saucers, exactly. Not just
unidentified flying objects. Okay.
Yeah, because gotcha. There have to be some anomalies somewhere in aviation history in Japan where they looked at something and said, I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
But Chief Cabinet Secretary Nobutaka Machimura later told reporters he believed they were definitely real. It's the sort of question politicians dread, but under Japanese rules are unable to ignore. A member of the opposition asked the government what its policy was to deal with UFOs. He said, work should begin urgently to try to confirm whether or not they exist because of what he called, and this is a quote, incessant reportings of sightings. The Japanese civil service swung into action. In a statement, it said that should a flying saucer be spotted in the country's airspace, a fighter would be scrambled to attempt visual confirmation. But it emphasized that the government was not aware of cases where a UFO from space had been discovered. Most alerts turn out to be birds or other objects. So, okay, there is this whole, we do have UFOs, they usually turn out to be something else, but now they're cobbling together an official government policy on what to do if an alien spacecraft shows up.
Okay, okay.
Right there in Japan, with a government official confirming, this is Nobutaka Machimura confirming that he believes they exist. It says he drew laughter from reporters when he admitted that this was a stereotypical response from the bureaucrats. And perhaps with his tongue a little in his cheek, he insisted that he believed UFOs did definitely exist. Oh, so maybe he was, I've read too far now. Maybe he was kidding around. Question about the existence of alien spaceships, Japan's Prime Minister Yasuo Fukuda thought about it and then answered carefully. He said he had not yet confirmed whether they existed. The conspiracy theorists and your host here will note that the answer was not a no. Okay?
So we've got maybe this is an example of how every country needs to have at least one nut in the legislature or whatever, you know, to represent the you know, those in the society who happen to believe in these things.
Well, the people who are, you know, you're calling them nuts, but I'm going to say tuned in to these things, okay, who are ready to accept the truth, you know, they need to be represented, right? That's
there you go. And so you have to have at least one person in Congress in this country and or maybe the parliament there or whatever that comes out and says, yeah, these things are real. And, you know, and everybody else kind of chuckles and then it goes on about their business. Is that what we're seeing here?
I think not. I think
okay.
We've got one minister who is confirming it. And then the Prime Minister not denying it. Okay?
Okay. All right.
So I think that Japan knows something about UFOs. And that's what leads us now to out of
Astounding Science Facts.
Nicely done, Stephen. Spare me the awkward transition. Just play the other end. Exactly what was needed there. Well done. You're in.
Yeah, you know, when we're having segue trouble, we just, you know, that's exactly what we did.
Cut to the MP3. All right.
That's right.
This is from Yahoo News Today, okay? Life in outer space, astronomers hunt aliens. Tokyo, Dateline Today, gang. Japan's biggest astronomical observatories are teaming up for an unprecedented quest to find out whether there is life in outer space. The project, led by Japanese astronomers, will bring together a dozen or more observatories from all over the country to study one star that researchers see as a potential home to an extraterrestrial civilization. Everyone wonders at least once in their lifetime whether space is infinite and whether aliens really do exist, said Shinya Narawasa, chief researcher at Nishihara Astronomical Observatory in western Japan. The search for aliens and UFOs is not new to Japan. Last year, UFOs grabbed the headlines after a lawmaker submitted a question to the cabinet on whether the country had confirmed any cases of their existence. The government's answer, no, although one minister said yes. In the scientific world, Japanese researchers have used antennas to catch radio signals from outer space and analyze the prisms of celestial lights to see if any laser emissions from space can be found, Narasawa said. Their searches have not been too fruitful so far. The new project will involve multiple astronomers filming one star over several nights sometime next year, along with the usual light analysis and recording of radio signals. He says, when there are some suspicious signals, sometimes it's hard to tell whether they are artificial ones coming from the Earth, for example, from machines, or whether they are coming from the stars in the natural world. So there you have it. 6 months ago, this question comes up in Parliament. Are UFOs real? And now, just a few months later, Japan on this huge initiative to prove that there may be life on other planets.
Now, the thing I need to ask is, do they have some particular star in mind? If they got special knowledge, then, you know.
You know, that's a good question. And I would think that it's probably one of these, you know, we've reported on the Speculist over the last couple of years. Some of these stars they found have been increasingly sun-like or have had planets that look like they might be Earth-like, possibly orbiting them or something like that. I assume they must be looking at the profiles of these new star finds and picking one out that they think is going to be a, you know, likely to be a winner. But or, you know, again, if there is inside knowledge about extraterrestrial life in the Chinese government, maybe they already know which star to point at. You see, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well,
so of course that kind of throws us back into Tales of the Paranormal.
Exactly. So I don't think I'll play it again, but yeah,
it kind of does. Okay.
Well, I mean, I guess the best thing to do is just stay tuned right here, right?
We will be updating you either with additional buttons on Tales of the Paranormal or Astounding Science Facts, depending on which way Japan goes with this thing. So
exactly.
So stay tuned. But we'll be having fun with it either way. And speaking of fun, let's talk about the movies. I know one of the topics we wanted to get into this evening is what an extraordinarily fun movie summer we're having this year. And what are your thoughts on that, Stephen?
Well, I mean, it has been a fun summer because I've gone to the movies, it seems like, every weekend for like over a month. And without exception, I've had a good time every time. And I cannot remember when I've ever had a summer like that, except for maybe 1982. Okay, that's how long it. Okay,
what happened in
82?
What did we get?
Okay, let's go through. Conan the Barbarian.
All right.
Rocky III, Blade Runner, E.T., Firefox, Poltergeist, Star Trek II. Officer and a Gentleman, Secret of NIMH, The Thing, Tron, and Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and Road Warrior.
Wow.
All in one summer. Yeah, that was the most awesome summer ever. And we may be close to having a summer similar to that in its just sheer awesomeness.
sheer cinematic awesomeness.
Yeah.
So what are the contenders this year? What's got your attention that this could be a 1982 reprise here? What are the big movies?
Okay, here's the movies I have seen so far this summer, and I'm counting Forbidden Kingdom as a summer movie, even though it might have been a little bit, you know, a late spring type movie. But Forbidden Kingdom.
Sure. We're good.
Yeah, it's still playing somewhere, I'm sure. Great movie. That was a Jackie Chan, Jet Li movie. If you didn't see it, catch it on DVD here in a few months. You'll like it. It's got a 63% Rotten Tomatoes, which means it's fresh. They, you know, the critics more or less liked it. And so, yeah, it's a good movie. Did you get to see that one, Phil?
I have not seen that one. No, I did want to go see that when it was out, so I'm planning on picking that up on pay-per-view one of these nights, I think.
There you go. And it'll be on pay-per-view probably pretty soon, huh?
It should be.
Then on May 2nd, the summer season kicked off with Iron Man. And
right.
Iron Man's awesome. 93% of critics liked it, according to Rotten Tomatoes. And Phil and I loved it. I think it's safe to say. Is that right, Phil?
I thought it was awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, that is the movie of the summer so far, actually.
Yeah.
I've seen several others I really like, but that one works for me on just a lot of levels. It's a great superhero movie. It's just a fun movie. I think it does
complete success.
Ridiculous themes. Yeah. It's a good movie.
It's a complete success. I was never all that huge of an Iron Man fan as growing up. That was not, you know, I was Spider-Man, Hulk, Batman. I mean, but I never really read Iron Man. But man, I am now. I'm an Iron Man fan. But anyway, looking forward to the sequels to that, no doubt. Then the next weekend after Iron Man was Speed Racer. Now Speed Racer only got 36% positive over at Rotten Tomatoes. But you know, I think it helps to be a 9-year-old kid to go see Speed Racer.
Right.
If you're a young 10-year-old, yeah, I took my kids to it and they loved it. It's like cotton candy for the eyes. I mean,
right.
It was a beautiful film, digital all the way through, and just, I mean, so you know, you better not have one of those conditions that could be set off. You know, if you have epilepsy, do not go see Speed Racer. It'll set off a seizure for sure. And I'm not even trying to be funny.
That's a serious possible issue there. With
yeah, injuries. Because I mean, it's just so much stuff being thrown at your, you know, visually being thrown at you, and flashing and everything else.
So we're working our way through the list. I just want to say this is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Phil and Steven talking about the fun future and the future of fun. If you have some thoughts on the fun future, we'll be opening up the phone lines here in just a bit. You can call us at 347-215-8972 or join us in our live chat. Go ahead. Sorry to interrupt you there, Steven.
That was May 9th.
How did it compare to the TV show? Did they move more? Because what I remember about Speed Racer was it was kind of the first Japanese cartoon any of us ever saw, and the characters didn't really move much, right? They, you know, like they'd be kind of frozen in place, and then they'd move little, and then the car would move. You know, there was
lots of motion in Speed Racer.
This
thing was, and again, the plot didn't have to be. There wasn't much plot to it. John Goodman, he almost stole the show. There are times when John Goodman really brings his A game, and he out-acts the material he's in sometimes. This is one of those movies, and it's just good. It's a fun show for a young audience, but it doesn't really tax you mentally. It taxes you visually.
Right.
Your eyes will be tired coming out of there. And the world, when you walk out into the mundane world, it seems very mundane after watching Speed Racer.
Speed Racer. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the colors look dim. It looks like you're in a black and white movie when you walk out into the real world after being in Speed Racer. I don't know any other way to put it.
Bookmark that idea, because we're going to be talking about virtual reality later, and there could be a much more profound version of that kind of letdown for people enjoying the kinds of recreation that'll become available in the future. This is like an early warning of that kind of thing, possibly.
Absolutely.
Coming out of spectacular visual movie, and then suddenly the world doesn't quite look as bright. And we'll get into that a little bit later. Okay, so what's next after Speed Racer?
Okay, Prince Caspian, which some people liked and some people didn't. I liked it, and particularly the battle scenes were pretty awesome. We've talked about this a few shows back. 66% of critics gave it positive, so that's good. The weekend following
I
that,
I like Prince Caspian. I think the key to that movie was getting Reepa Cheap the Mouse right. Eddie Izzard as the voice. I thought it was great. Big thumbs up for me on that.
Oh yeah. The next weekend after that was a huge movie as far as what people were looking forward to, and that was the Indiana Jones movie. Indiana Jones was not a complete success, but the problems that Indiana Jones had were certainly not related to Harrison Ford being too old. The age of the character actually was part of the plot, and it worked. An old Indy worked. It was the plot itself was, there were they took some questionable risks with Indiana Jones in this one, and some of the risks seemed to pay off, and then some did not. But 77% of critics liked it. I liked it, and it was good to see Indiana Jones back on the big screen. And so
it was great hearing that theme again, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Just you forget how after 19 years, it's nice. Okay, the next weekend following that, June 6th, Kung Fu Panda opened. And
okay.
Phil, you haven't seen it yet, but great kids movie. I mean, I can't praise it enough. That is one of the finest kids movies. Well, let's see. I guess the last one I liked as well was probably The Incredibles. Last kids movie
so
I liked as well.
That gives you a good picture of what you're talking about there.
The Incredibles is a totally different type of picture, but yes, Kung Fu Panda, another kids movie that was just awesome, and to that extent. 88% of critics thought it was great and gave it thumbs up. June 13th, The Incredible Hulk. Nice companion piece to Iron Man, and Phil got to watch it as a double feature, and so that's... That was great. And I enjoyed it a lot. Not quite as success as Iron Man. Not quite that great, but very, very good. And 66% of critics thought it was good.
Just a lot of fun, that movie, I thought. And you know, we talked about this a little last week. It was kind of a sigh of relief after the original The Hulk, the Ang Lee version, which maybe struck people as a little overwrought, a little heavy-handed treatment of the material. Although I want to say that I caught that on Sci-Fi the other night, and I was watching it, and actually that movie was quite a bit more fun than I remembered. So I wanted to retract a little bit some of the things I'd said about the original, or not the original, but the earlier incarnation of the Hulk, the Ang Lee version. Seems like he was kind of having fun with the material. With the split screen, he was kind of making it like a comic book. And
yeah, he did a little of that.
He was having the color palette with the green and the purple. It was just awfully weird and awfully awfully heavy, especially at the end, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Well,
okay, and so this last weekend, the movie that opened up for this weekend, the big one, was Get Smart.
Okay.
And I enjoyed it. I went and saw that one on Friday, and thought it was great. They took the material and improved upon it, I thought. It's instead of the character Maxwell Smart, and the funny thing is, you get the idea from the previews that he's just going to be a bumbling type fool.
Right.
That happens to get the job done, bumbles into getting the job done, which is kind of the way the TV show played it.
That was the premise of the show, yeah.
Right. In this movie, it's funny, he bumbled, yes, but he was also, he had moments of sheer awesomeness. Where he would, the part in the preview where he throws the phone, and the phone, of course, is on a cord, and so it doesn't hit the bad guy.
Right.
and so they showed that much in the preview. Well, if they'd have shown the very next thing, you'd see that, well, Maxwell Smart is actually capable of doing some stuff, because
right.
He says, well, if that doesn't work, maybe I'll try something else. Well, he did, and it worked. But it was a funny movie. Anne Hathaway became a movie star in this one. If she wasn't before, she certainly is now. And so... it's, yeah, very good movie, and 52%, just over half of the critics thought it was good. I think when you have silly comedies, or comedies that display some silliness, they're at a disadvantage with the critics, I think. So I think 52% is actually a pretty high score for this sort of comedy with the critics. So it was a good movie, and I think it's fun. So anyway, that's what we've had so far this summer.
And what do we got coming up? It seems like there's some more yet to come this summer, I believe.
Oh yeah, next weekend we get two movies I just got to see. WALL-E, Pixar's entry this summer. Of course, Pixar. Have they made a movie that's bad yet? I don't think so.
I can't think of anything they've made that was bad. Although I got to tell you, I've been watching the previews from WALL-E, and I'm going, geez, this doesn't really grab me. So I don't know. Maybe they just didn't cut the trailer well. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a try. They have earned my trust, so I'm going to give them a shot. The other movie I just got to see next weekend, I can't take the kids to. It's Wanted with Angelina Jolie and what's that guy's name that's playing next opposite her. This is the guy from
The Last King of Scotland, right?
Okay.
I guess.
But these, it just looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. This is a big shoot 'em up, and it's going to be. It just looks great. And so, anyway, I'm going to be there for both of those, I guess, next weekend. I have to get some babysitter on Saturday night or something. So anyway, it's going to be fun. That's next weekend, and then the weekend following that, July 2, anyway, is Hancock. Which is Will Smith.
Oh, yeah.
Will Smith's got to have his blockbuster every summer, and this is it.
Right. Well, and with all these superhero movies out, so he's got to do one, right?
Yeah. This looks like it's going to be fun, too. And
That looks like a funny movie, yeah.
Yeah, and then Hellboy 2 follows that
right.
on July 11th. And then July 18th, we get The Dark Knight, which is the sequel to The Batman
right.
Begins. And we get a few things that follow after Batman really is the last huge deal, but then we get an X-Files movie the following weekend. That one That's interesting. I mean, that's.
I'm very much looking forward to that. I've seen the trailer for that. That didn't grab me either, which, you know, was really surprising to me. But I don't know where they're going with the X-Files. I got to tell you, I've seen that preview, and I'm like, what's this all?
Yeah, I kind of had assumed that X-Files was deader than a doornail, but they're resurrecting it, and here we go. So.
If you read The Speculist, you'd know I've been putting things up there about the new X-Files movie, Stephen. So, you know.
Okay. All right.
Actually, you know,
yeah, once every 3 or 4 years, whether you don't want to.
At least.
Yeah.
Okay. I think every 2 years I've had an X-Files post.
Okay.
I'm going to go back and check. But, no, my big observation on that, speaking of Last King of Scotland, is it looks to me like Gillian Anderson, while not staying as blonde as she was in Last King of Scotland, is still not as dark of red of a redhead in the new X-Files movie. And I think this could cost him a lot. You know,
that's right. That's the thing about X-Files. X-Files was almost a black and white show, but the red was the only thing in the show that really the color stood
right.
out.
That stood out. Yeah. You saw her hair.
It's always dingy. I mean, the rest of the show, but man, that red hair. Can X-Files survive without the deep red hair of Julian Anderson?
Yeah, well, I will report back on that one.
Okay,
absolutely. I will look at it the weekend, and I'll let you know. So
and then we got a few things following that. Mummy 3, which I don't care to see. And then Star Wars, the animated movie, Clone Wars.
Okay.
And then, but the last thing of the summer is Tropic Thunder, which I am kind of looking forward to. It looks like it could be fun. So. That's it. That's a pretty big summer. I mean, if you can get two or three things that are halfway interesting to watch, you know, then that's a pretty cool summer. So.
Well, plus there's a new Mike Myers movie, The Love Guru. There's a new Adam Sandler movie, You Don't Mess with the Zohan. There's a new M. Night Shyamalan film.
Well, the M. Night Shyamalan film is almost universally panned. And
which often happens with his movies.
Yeah, that's true, but they said this one's particularly bad. I mean,
yeah,
career-ending bad. They said Lady in the Water.
They said that about Lady in the Water.
Yeah, and Lady in the Water was pretty weird, and I watched it on a movie channel one night. It just happened to be on, and it wasn't as bad as what I'd heard. It was actually, you know, there was a plot. You could follow it. It wasn't terrible. But apparently this one's real bad. And then Love Guru says
that, any movie. Would you agree, dumbest title of any movie in our lifetime? Is that fair to say?
The Happening.
Break. I mean, try a little harder next time. Come on. The Happening.
If you got in the hands of a talented director, I mean, The Happening could. You know, I mean, that title could be just perfect. But, you know, Alfred Hitchcock could have taken that and made something, you know.
I guess. The word just doesn't – it sounds very 70s to me. You know, it just doesn't sound threatening or like The Incident. Now, that could be – I don't know. But my daughter went to see The Happening.
The Antidote.
the deal. I don't know. And she reports that it is the dumbest movie she has ever seen in her entire life.
Yeah, they said it's career-ending bad. I mean, real bad. And they said the other movie that could be career-ending bad this summer is Mike Myers' Love Guru.
Oh,
they said, it actually got worse. You got 19% of critics thought that The Happening was okay and gave it a positive reviews. Only 16% of critics gave Love Guru any love at all. It's they said it was terrible, and so, you know, oh well.
Okay, so you skipped over the ones that are not, history won't remember them the way it does all those movies you listed from 1982.
Exactly. So, yeah, you got to have a couple of weekend entries even in a great summer. So I guess that's what those were. And Zohan got mixed reviews. I haven't seen it yet. I guess I'll get to it once the truly awesome stuff I've seen. So, anyway.
Now, I just want to note something I read in the chat room, which is that our good buddy Harvey was actually working in the movie business back in '82. He was running the projector at the Twin Cinemas and at the drive-in, and he saw every single one of those movies that you mentioned, probably multiple times. So.
And I imagine he would agree with me. That's probably the high point in cinema, is, you know, unless you go back to the year that you got Gone with the Wind and And what was the other one? Oh, shoot. Over the Rainbow. Come on, help me
out. Oh, yeah, Wizard of Oz. That's right.
Wizard of Oz. Those two came out in the same year, and several other movies, too, that were great and they're well-remembered. That was like, you had that year, and then you had 1982, and maybe now we've got a 1939. Thanks. Thanks, Michael.
Yeah, but it sounds like, for one thing, I don't think Harvey was around back in 39, but it sounds like
no.
He's also having some additional fun working at the drive-in, but we can't go there. But anyone reading the chat will understand what I'm talking about. I should mention that I was working the exact same job a year earlier, and I got to watch, Superman 2 and Stripes about 36 times each, so that wasn't quite as good of a summer. I would like to have mixed it up just a little bit more than I did. But
let me just give you compare like this summer to last summer.
Okay.
Last summer we had Silver Surfer, Stardust, Evan Almighty, you know, Shrek the Third. I mean, Spider-Man 3 was even a letdown last summer. So yeah, I mean, so you got, I mean. Just as far as normal summer times go, we're ahead of the curve, no doubt. So.
All right. This is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're talking movies. We're getting ready to talk about the fun future. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call us at 347-215-8972 or join us on our live chat. So let's wrap this around now. So we've got we've got a lot of fun movies out, and you know. Is the world becoming more fun? Do we live in an increasingly fun focused culture, would you say? I mean, one of the ideas that we talk about on The Speculist is that generally automation of work has created more leisure over the last since industrialization anyway, if not throughout all of human history. And so we've been able to focus more on enjoying ourselves and having fun. We talk about accelerating change. We talk about technology growing at a more and more rapid pace. Does that mean that the automation of work is going to happen faster, that we're going to get more leisure time, that we're going to have more options for fun? What do you think, Stephen?
Well, yeah, I do. If you have more time on your hands, I mean, and it seems like, a lot of people work as much as they ever have. It seems like if you average it out, there's more people are being able to take at least Saturday and Sunday off,
right.
than ever before, and and some people work even less than that, and the 40-hour work week is I think it's fairly standard, and so people that work that, they have some leisure time, and they have some money, some additional money on hand. Now, obviously, gas going up the way it has cut into some of the leisure fund, the fundage for the fund. Particularly with things like movies, I mean, that's about the most economical kind of fun you can have as a family, even though. Popcorn, though. They'll stick it to you with a popcorn, but
they will. Well, that's where they make their money, actually, is the markup on the popcorn is really what gets you by in the movie business, as Harvey would explain if he were to call in and step us through that.
You have a captive audience. When you step into the lobby, there's not like 14 different, there's not other options. That's it.
Yeah, margins on the movie itself are very small, but man, the popcorn, you put 75 cents worth of popcorn in a cup and sell it for $6.
That's
where you're turning some money right there.
Of course, Sherilyn brings the big purse, but we won't get into that.
There you go. Well, you guys are why tickets cost so much.
Yeah, that's right. When I carry my four kids to the theater, I mean, I have to take out a mortgage if I want to get popcorn and Cokes for everybody. But, yeah.
But there does seem to be – I mean, I was thinking about myself talking about my bike rack last week, and I go out and ride my bike. There's all these trails around here in Colorado. Colorado is a very outdoor recreation-oriented place. Our tourism's our number one industry. We're all about skiing. We're all about hiking and fishing and
beautiful weather most of the year.
Camping. Yeah. So it's all about getting outdoors and having a good time. But it seems like that adults are able to or have chosen to make that a much more important part of their lives than I think a generation ago did. You know,
right.
I don't recall my dad having a bike, you know.
Yeah.
He didn't have a bike rack on his car, and he didn't go out and hit the trails or any of that kind of stuff. I mean, he liked to have a good time. It's not that he wasn't any fun, but the idea that outdoor recreation would just be a normal part of his life just wasn't an idea that was part of his generation. You know, it was just
right.
not something that he would have done back when he was my age.
Right.
But now it's just assumed everybody does. You know, if you meet people, it's like, well, what do you do for fun? Everybody's got an answer to that question, right? Everyone has something in their life that they use to fill their leisure time. That's recreational. That you know gives them a chance to blow off steam, to not be at work, to be doing something strictly for the enjoyment of it. And
that's
of course,
right.
with recreation, you make this other case that you're going out and getting exercise and all that kind of stuff. But you know, I mean, exercise is like going to the gym. Like
right,
getting
right.
on a bike is fun, you know. Or
it ought to be. It ought to be.
Yeah. That's kind of the purpose of it. But I guess the other question then is if the economy is pushing us in that direction, or if the economy is allowing that to happen, does it gain a critical mass at some point? Do we reach a point where entertainment and recreation become the center of the economy?
I think we'll know. I think we'll know when we you know go to like I don't know you're meeting somebody on an airplane, okay, you sit down next to somebody on an airplane and you ask them what they do. If the answer is not their job, that I think you know when we will have crossed an important threshold when somebody answers that question with something other than what their job is, and that becomes the regular answer. Well, I bike or
I skateboard.
I skateboard and oh yeah, well you know, and I support my skateboarding habit by you know doing this or that. But yeah, that's I think that and you're seeing more and more of that. I mean,
you know, well, definitely there are people. I mean, if you honestly ask them, what the answer would be, I play Halo, right?
Yeah, that's what I do, and I support Halo.
My spouse's income supports my Halo habit. While I'm
yeah.
Job, right?
I mean, well, we have uncharitable names for people like that, but I mean, but
it's real. I mean,
yeah.
At that point, recreation has become the main focus of those individuals' life. Now, interesting question. Are they having fun? I wonder.
Yeah, I would think that definitely somebody that spends their time pursuing something that they really love is having fun.
Yeah, playing Halo 12 hours a day. You better be having fun. Good.
Yeah, you need to find something else to do because
go get a job if you're not going to enjoy it. You know,
yeah,
go get something that will pay. I would think.
Yeah, exactly.
Would be the correct answer. So if that's true, so. If we're heading towards this fun future where either the focus of the economy is fun or perhaps the economy is being managed out of our hands, this is post-singularity or near-singularity where enough of the labor has been automated that there's really not all that much for us to do, then we live in this kind of fun future where we all answer the question that way. If I sit down on the plane, somebody says, what do you do? I say, well, I run a blog and I work on a blog with some friends, and I do a podcast with some friends. Right? That's actually what I do. That's my that's my main thing. Oh, and I like to do some biking sometimes too. Right?
Yeah. I've got a bike rack on top of the plane here. Hope
yeah,
that's
exactly. you know, when either the economy itself or our own lives are focused primarily on those activities. Now, I guess the question then would be. Is that an inevitable scenario, or are there things that would prevent that scenario from coming into play? And if so, what things do you think would prevent it?
Peak oil. Peak oil could prevent it, at least slow down our obtaining the singularity. If it became a point where we could not afford just daily essentials, then I mean, our lives could get very much harder. And we'd end up having to work harder to get the necessities of life, that could be something that would cause that to happen. Now, the reason I believe that peak oil will happen, and if we're not close, it'll happen at some point. But there are going to be alternatives come online, and so I believe that in spite of peak oil, that we're going to see this fun future. So,
yeah, well, I think that's the answer, though. It's, you know, what can prevent a fun future? Item one on my list was a catastrophe, right?
Yeah.
Peak oil being one example, or just the end of the world generally, you know. Big,
yeah, we wipe ourselves out somehow, yeah.
Nuclear war, something like that. That's one possibility. My next possibility for what might prevent it, assuming we avert any of those, that we avoid any of those, and the world doesn't end, and we successfully make a transition to another form of energy. Well, what if the automation never really frees us? Because I have to say that to date, it has not freed me particularly. Okay,
yeah.
I actually spent about 5 hours working today,
right.
And that's partly due to the fact that this is a very busy time of the year for us. We've got our big user conference in August, and then I've got another really huge event coming up in November, and I'm pretty much flat out between now just about and the end of the year.
I'm gonna take issue with what you just said, Phil.
Okay.
You worked hard outside over the weekend, and you know you probably did some chores that were not necessarily the most fun thing in the world around the house, right? So automation hasn't freed you from those things.
Right.
But what you do for a living, you are in a place that is air conditioned.
True.
I'm sure. You don't get there by walking several miles. You get there by an automobile.
Absolutely.
And the work that you do is mental work with a computer. Compare that to the work that maybe your father or grandfather or great grandfather.
Oh yeah, I'm not
did.
Complaining.
I wasn't suggesting you were, but I'm just saying automation has freed you from some of the drudgery. The type work you do is like most people in this country is mental. It's in an office which is quite a bit different from the work.
A generation or two ago, they'd work 5-6 days a week, 6-7 days a week. And it's back-breaking drudgery. Yeah, you know,
yeah.
It kills you by the time you're our age, right? I mean,
exactly.
Yeah, I don't mean to suggest that I've got it all that tough. I'm just looking ahead and going, yeah, but I'm not in the fun future yet, right?
Exactly. You're not freed yet. You're.
Yeah, the AIs aren't doing product marketing for me yet, and I'm still doing it, right? So.
Exactly. And you actually have to spend your time doing it rather than you know going on your fun tour of the country or whatever you would do. So.
Could have been out riding my bike today, you see.
Yeah.
I had work I had to do. So, that's the tension we live in. You know, today's Sunday, and you think, well, this would really have been a pretty good day to be out on the bike, but I had work to do. So one thing is that automation actually enables us to do more and more and more, but it doesn't kick in and, or it takes a lot longer to kick in and actually take over for us, to actually free us from anything. Because what happens is, as things get automated, organizations get by with fewer and fewer people. So you have smaller teams working on projects that would have taken larger teams back in the past, but now you've got so much of it's outsourced, so much of it's done by software, some of it's kind of templated work that's been done before, and you don't actually get a, you know, it's like back in the 90s when they kept looking for the peace dividend, right? It's
yeah.
Like it never exactly showed up. You know, you're looking for it, you're going, okay, where's my automation dividend? Didn't quite get there. So that's one thing. But I'm.
I guess what happened was that you just did a higher order of work now than what you used to.
You're organizing higher level pieces, but then
yeah.
That's very time consuming, and you get a bigger piece of it than you would have in the past.
Yeah.
So that's a piece that I think could prevent the fun future. And the final one is, what if the future gets here and we refuse to have fun? Okay, so
explain why or how or what do you mean?
Yeah, this came up in the discussion on my blog post about what I call the new racism, which is this, which is pessimism, this kind of excessive focus on disastrous futures. And I think one of the things that accompanies our technological progress and our improved conditions, and we've talked about how we've become less tolerant of risk. We talk about how dangers and risks that would have been perfectly acceptable a generation or two ago are completely unacceptable now. Well, as we get more fixated on all the possible negative outcomes, it's possible that we don't appreciate our improved circumstances. Kind of what you were just saying to me, right? Phil, you've really got it pretty good, right? And in fact, the thing I wrote, if our fixation with disaster and intolerance of risk continue to grow at the same pace as our overall improvement of the world, the happiest era in human history might turn out to be the most miserable. Because even though we've got it great, we're going to spend our time worrying about all the bad things that can happen and not really appreciating the fun that we've got. So I think that's probably the kind of cultural block to the fun future.
Which is exactly why people need to read the Speculist and listen to Fast Forward Radio. We are the antidote, or at least
we're here to keep that from happening.
Exactly, that is our mission.
We're spending a half hour talking about fun summer movies because it's important. Okay, that's what we're saying. All right.
That is our mission.
We're on a mission from God.
Beautiful. And that mission is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're taking your calls at 347-215-8972. If you want to talk about the fun future, give us a call or join us in our chat room. So let's talk then about what's going to happen. We're going to fulfill our mission, as Elwood laid it out there. We're not going to let the buzzkills get us down. Catastrophe won't happen. Automation will kick in. We'll decide to enjoy the fun future. So what are our choices of the future of fun? What fun will we have in the future that we can't have now? And I hear you, Stephen. I know you got one that you want to share. So tell me a fun thing that you're looking forward to in the future.
Well, not getting cancer I hate to be so down, but I'm quite serious about that. I mean, one of the consequences of getting older, if you live long enough, you're going to get cancer. If something else doesn't kill you, you will get cancer. Wouldn't it be great to live in a future where you don't have that to look forward to? Or either, you know, you got your options are death or cancer. That'd be a great thing. So I'm thinking about improved health, life extension in general. Living to be 100 years old in a 100-year-old body doesn't sound all that great. Being 100 years old in the body of a 40-year-old or a 30-year-old, that sounds pretty great. And I wouldn't mind being 100 years old and being biologically young. So something I'm definitely looking forward to is a future where getting older doesn't mean getting old. And so I guess that's the biggie for me.
I think so too. Well, and the distinction though I would make though is between happiness and fun. Okay.
Okay.
Because I would agree that that not getting cancer is the key to a happy future. But I could like never get cancer and still not have much fun.
Yeah, you could be completely miserable without cancer, no doubt. Yeah, no, that's true. And so I guess
or just not have much fun, you know, not even be miserable, but just
constantly clock in, clock out at work, and go home and sit in front of the tube and go to bed and get up and do it again. You could be perfectly healthy and just do that. Yeah, that's true.
I don't ever do this, but I just want to give a shout out to Harvey in the chat room. Harvey, the new Oldsmobiles are in early this year. Okay, I'm sorry. No, I'm not even going to explain it. If anyone's following in the chat room, they'll know what I'm talking
about.
So,
awesome.
How about this? Let me throw a really fun one out there, okay? An attempted fun one. It's the future. We've got technology we didn't have before. I think the big one I look forward to has got to be fully immersive virtual reality technology, because they're the fun possibilities open up in a huge way, right? The kinds of things that we can do, the kinds of things we can experience becomes a tremendously richer selection of choices than what we currently have. And you see where if people get hooked on playing Halo today, how much more addictive if you're in that game fully, physically.
Right.
You're actually feeling yourself walking along. You feel the heat from the sniper fire as it almost hits you. You know, you feel yourself fall to the ground. You feel the shock from an explosion. I mean, that's kind of fun to the point of being terrifying. I'm not sure if I would enjoy playing a game like that. I don't know if I would.
I think you could get into it. I mean, that would be awesome. Yeah, and I read a science fiction story, and if I can find it and link to it in the show notes, I will. I cannot remember the title of it, but basically it was imagining a future where people enter virtual reality in sort of a you know, it'd be like the Star Wars holodeck type deal where you run, you physically move. You don't just you don't just stand there. You know, you jump, run, move, and it's a future where everybody's in great shape because everybody is involved in some sort of super, you know, active, virtual reality. They could be skiing, or they could be fighting medieval battles, and you know, you name it. And everybody's in great shape because of it. So
yeah, with the holodeck, that all becomes possible. If you want to go join William the Conqueror and help the Normans take over England, you know, you plug it in and you're there, right?
Right. Instead of couch potatoes, I guess we'd have couch Conans. That's what we'd have. Yeah.
Well, something that Glenn Reynolds wrote a couple of weeks ago, he was talking about kids actually getting in very good shape playing with these Wii consoles.
Yeah.
And he said that we might not be that far from the day when you'll be able to identify serious computer gamers because of their sleek, chiseled physiques, right? And kind of hard to picture now, but he could actually be onto something there, and that would be pretty amazing. Well, let me give an example of the one I thought of, because my wife and I were talking about this at dinner, and we just went through the whole holodeck panoply. I mean, once you have the full immersion virtual reality, there's so many fun things. You know, you can travel through time, you can create alternate versions of the world you live in where things work out better, you know.
Yeah.
Somebody who's a jerk, you can bring them into that world and get the better of them every time, right? I mean, just, you know, like what Barclay did on Star Trek The Next Generation, where he recreated his world where everyone was subservient to him, the women were in love with him, everybody thought he was the greatest, right? You know, you could have that kind of secret life of Walter Mitty world. But here's one that occurred to me. A game, it's Everest, okay? It's Mount Everest.
All right.
And you physically are trying to climb to you're trying to summit Everest, okay? And it is a painstaking virtual reality recreation of Everest. So like trying to get through a Dungeons and Dragons scenario or something like that, you'd have to play for a long time to actually build up the experience and the knowledge and everything, because you'd just keep dying, right? Is my guess if I were thrown into a full VR simulation of trying to climb Everest, you know, today, I would die fairly early on, right? And the great thing is you could just keep working your way up until eventually you would do it. You get in great shape, you know, the whole time. And my wife and I were talking about this. She said, well, yeah, but why not really go climb Everest? And, you know,
the thing about that is, you know, you get to keep your fingers and your toes.
Exactly right. Well,
I'm sorry. Did I steal your thunder on that, Phil? I'm sorry.
No. That's an excellent way of putting it. I put it a different way. I put it this way. I wouldn't know until I got there, which was, you know, until I actually got to the top in the VR game, which was the time that wasn't going to kill me.
Yeah.
So, I don't really want to die. See, that's the thing. It would be great to actually get to the top of Mount Everest, but I don't actually want to die doing it, as so many have. And, keep all your fingers, keep all your toes. You build up the experience, and you actually have physically the same experience that they would have, that a climber would have, but without the risk.
Yeah.
You would have the internal game risk, but not the risk to life and limb that someone experiences. So it's a great way of controlling risk, of taking that risk and making it fun, making it something very constructive that you can do with your time. The other thing I would say about that is Everest is a really good example of, as the world develops economically and as we become more of a global community, you know, there are more and more people trying to climb Everest all the time. There's actually an environmental impact around just all the junk they're leaving on the mountain and, you know, unfortunately their bodies that often get left on the mountain. And it's just become kind of a mess, people trying to climb Everest. And not, you know, if you take that and multiply that out by a generation or two, you're going to have thousands, I don't know, tens of thousands of people trying to climb Everest every year. Wouldn't it be better?
They have to drop Wall-E on the mountainside just to clean it up.
Yeah, well, yeah, they're going to have to do something pretty soon, I think, literally.
Yeah.
But so that was my idea. I want to do the virtual Mount Everest climb. Do we have anything, Michael, in the chat room? Any other ideas from people on board?
It looks like Michael's kind of stuck in one idea.
It's a good idea. That's all I'm saying.
there's no point in dancing around it. sex in virtual reality.
Well, you know, that is going to have to be a huge application for holodeck technology.
I'm going to say that it'll be the driving thing towards the holodecks, and of course, once we have it, then they'll be used for other things as well. But I would say that that will probably drive the technology.
Well, much as it has, you know, no one's particularly pleased with this fact, but it's been pointed out that probably the first business model that really succeeded on the web was pornography.
Yeah.
It's entirely possible that the biggest business model for the foreseeable future for virtual reality will be exactly that. I mean, that's just...
Well, and the VCR,
a virtual experience that a lot of people are going to want to have.
Yeah, it's been pointed out also that the VCR succeeded because of pornography. I mean, and of course, you know, then after it succeeded for that reason, then everybody else bought one. So, yeah.
Anyway. Just another shout out to the chat room. This time to Michael. All I'm saying is that. That people who've tried to build other business models aren't particularly happy that model succeeded as opposed to theirs. I'm not saying that the users of the, you know, the end customers aren't happy about it, obviously. The business model seems to be working. Okay, so I think we're going to maybe push this an extra segment this evening. Stephen, what do you say? I think
absolutely. We got more to talk about.
Yeah, for sure. What other fun ideas for the future can you think of?
Well, there's this point. If you have an indefinite lifespan, you've got your holodeck and you've had all this different fun for years and years in the holodeck, is there the possibility of getting bored? You know, I mean, you no longer have to work for a living, let's say, and you've done it all in the holodeck, and you've probably done and outside the holodeck too. You've lived many, many, many years. In year 500, are you going to be bored?
I think that's an excellent question, and you can see the beginnings of that with the fact that people don't often go back and play the video game, the computer games that they've already worked their way through.
Right.
If you haven't
touched the Rubik's Cube in months, you know. I mean, it's solved, you know.
Yeah. Once you've kind of solved that space, it's not that engaging to you anymore. It's not that interesting to you anymore. I think that the idea that people would get tired of being able to have sex with anybody they want to might strike them as a little strange. But I think actually, if you take the fact that you can't get something out of the equation, it starts to look a lot different. And certainly, if you go back to my example of the Mount Everest game, you know, I don't know how long it would take if you're playing a couple 3 hours every day, working your way up slowly, 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 and then finally you reach the summit. I mean, I would be so done with that game after that, I'm sure, right?
Yeah, that's right. I've reached the summit. That's it.
I would not want to go back to base camp and take all my experience away and start again, you know. Or hey, let's try it with bad shoes or something like, you know, I don't think that would be good. What happens then? How do we stay engaged in a world where virtually anything is possible, and do we run the risk of a world in which we can experience anything that we want to experience not being any fun at all?
Well, my answer to the question, would we get bored, is no. And
okay.
I think the notion that we would get bored with an indefinite lifespan is something akin to the Tithonus error? Is that how you pronounce it? Help me with pronunciation of that.
Which error? I'm sorry.
It's the era where as you get older, you know, life extension, you spend the life extension in the nursing home. Tithonus error or whatever. Anyway,
I don't know that word. I'm sorry.
That is the era that says that if, you know, we get life extension, we'll get to spend 50 years sitting in diapers in the nursing home. Well, that's not. You know, Aubrey de Grey has adequately addressed that error. If you are sitting in the diapers in the nursing home, that is a dangerous way to live. You won't live that long. What we're talking about is regeneration so that you are in a young body. Okay. The notion that you get bored, though, even in a young body, is akin to that, because what I'm talking about is that you would have, in addition to staying young, we also are going to get smarter. And getting smarter changes the whole outlook of fun. It's a whole different deal. And as a matter of fact, Eliezer Yudowsky has come up with a theory on this, and I'd like to play like a little segment of his speech on it.
Okay, before you do, let me just say that this is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're going an extra 15 minutes tonight talking, because we're having so much fun talking about the fun future and the future of fun, Phil Bauermaster and Stephen Gordon. We're still got the lines open if you want to call in and join the conversation at 347-215-8972, or feel free to join our online chat talking about the future of fun. And now here's Eliezer Yudkowsky to talk about the theory of fun.
The smarter you are, the faster you generalize, and the faster you become bored with any given problem. Yes, the smarter you are, the faster you get bored. That is how it works. But when you get smarter, you can perceive new areas of the problem space that would have been incomprehensible to you before. Humans would get bored with chimpanzee fun extremely fast, but the space of human fun is enormously larger than the space of chimpanzee fun. If you have 10 bits, you have 1,000 possibilities. If you have 20 bits, you have 1,000,000 possibilities. If you have 30 bits, you have 1,000,000,000 possibilities. I don't think fun quite goes exactly like that. I don't think it's quite that simple, but I think that the basic relation is the same, that the size of fun space grows roughly exponentially as the amount of intelligence.
So, you know, a chimpanzee has a limited, you know, area of fun space, and the chimpanzees obviously have fun, but what the things that they do that are fun are so much more limited by comparison to us. If we're also getting smarter in the future, then the fun space would grow along with everything else. So there'd be opportunities for fun that in areas that we can't even grasp right now.
And that has got to be the key to avoid the boredom, to avoid falling into the trap, which is to find means of having fun, or at least to be living a life sufficiently balanced between having fun and doing other things, such that you continue to improve, that you continue to grow smarter, you continue to become more whole as a person, more complex, and then your increased perspective on the world is going to open up a broader fun space for you, I think, is Eliezer's talking about. I really like that idea. I like the idea of this kind of mappable or describable human fun space. It reminds me of, you know, we talk about possibility space, all the different possible futures we can have.
I think it's the same thing, isn't it? The
possibility space
is the fun space. If you have more possibilities, you have more opportunities for fun. And literally, there will be things that are, you know, that'll be fun and funny to us if we're smarter than that we just couldn't grasp today. I'm reminded of an episode in Simpsons where Lisa goes to the smart kid school, and you know they put some formula up on the board, and all the kids die laughing, and Lisa's sort of sitting there going, you know, what's so funny?
Right. There's some kind of pun written into the formula.
Exactly. You know, RDRR apparently was the answer to the to the equation, and the kids all thought
it matters. But I believe it was actually Bart who got sent to the fun school.
He graded
test scores with the nerdy kid, and he ended up at the fun school.
Or the smart school, yeah.
The smart school, yeah. Not the, it wasn't a particularly fun school, except for all those genius kids who thought the RDRR thing was hilarious. But
exactly.
Hey, you know what I just did? I just demonstrated the difference between a nerd and a geek, and I fell down firmly in the nerd category that time.
That's okay.
Sorry about that.
Oh, yeah. We cross the lines back and forth all the time here.
We have to once in a while. It's important, you know. I mean, I didn't want you to be on the record saying that was Lisa when everybody knows.
It was really Bart, yeah.
I was embarrassed for you, okay?
man.
So we open up this this fun space, and what we see then is the possibility to enjoy a much broader kind of existence than what we currently do, to enjoy ourselves in ways that we really can't even imagine now, in the same way that when we're little kids, we really can't imagine that there could be anything fun in, say, doing this podcast, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That, you know, that it's just you kind of have to grow into doing something like that before it becomes any fun for us. So, in fact, for an adult, if you can shake off the baggage, and if you can not focus entirely on all the problems and drudgery of life, your fun space is quite a bit bigger than it is as a child, just because you have so many more choices of things that you can possibly do. When you're a little kid, you're really kind of limited in what you can do for fun. You can have a blast, don't get me wrong, you know, but it's riding a bike. Of course, I still do that, but I mean, you know, it's playing outside with your friends. Maybe these days you got computer games and some of those kinds of things. But the options become so much greater as you get older and you have more skills, you have more experience, you have more knowledge, and you're able to
call the shots. That's the key.
Call the shots.
Yeah.
That's it exactly. So likewise, if we are to grow into more sophisticated beings than we currently are, then you know we stand on the verge of incredibly outrageous fun in the future that we can't even really describe or talk about.
That's right, and this is and fun at levels and being able to do things. I mean, imagine how much fun it would be if you had personal flight involved in some sort of a Quidditch match for real. You know, imagine how much fun that would be.
Yeah, you've got the actual technology to really fly. I mean,
right.
The broom actually works. And I don't know that I'd do a broom, because it just seems like that broom...
That looks a little dangerous, doesn't it?
Yeah, okay. No, we don't have to go there, but I don't want to see it on my broom or something like that.
Okay.
But you're flying around, you're literally flying through the air, literally chasing the golden snitch or whatever the game is. Or let's take it to that next level. Let's up our level of sophistication. What if you are playing that kind of a game in real time, in real space, with some kind of geopositioning satellite uplink that's telling you where you are, giving you clues to where you need to be, and you're tracking a number of different variables at the same time that you're, you know, just having this really fun time, flying really fast through the air, swooping, diving, grabbing the golden snitch.
I mean, it'd be great, and I guess we could start. That sort of game would probably be played first in virtual reality, and then when personal flight became available, then you could do it. You could do it for real. It just things like that, an opportunity to have that kind of fun. That'd be great, and I look forward to that.
Yeah, I think so. I think that the technology opens up new possibilities for us. And then also what Eliezer was talking about was just that we become capable of enjoying things that we really can't now. And that part is a little bit harder to talk about, because if we can't really imagine doing it, it's hard to imagine having fun doing it, right? that's kind of the trick with it. But you have to believe from your own experience growing from childhood to adulthood that transition is possible. I think that's
right.
The thing that tells us that we would be able to do that. And one of the things
we get to grow up again, even more, you know. So
yeah, we get to keep growing up. That's that's the idea. You know, we don't finish growing up. We always have that further advance in our own intelligence, further advance in our own possibility space, and in our own fun space that we have to look forward to.
Right. Well,
one of the things Eliezer talked about in his essay that got my attention was, he said, you know, if you just think of fun as stimulation, which I think some of these earlier implementations of virtual reality might end up being, if it's you know, just kind of the live version of porn, for example.
Right.
You know, you have the idea that you could just put a wire in to stimulate the pleasure center of your brain and just hit the button, right?
Yeah.
And just keep hitting the button for 500 years and just making your brain center feel good. Well, I think we can all see that wouldn't really be fun, even if it would feel good. Even if it would feel good for 500 years, that would miss out on the idea of an expanding space or of getting anywhere.
Right, right.
You know?
And I think part of fun is beyond feeling good. What you're doing with fun is you're accomplishing things, and you are, you know, you got goals, you reach them, and that's part of what you're accomplishing. So I suppose the argument could be made, well, we'll just stimulate the area of your brain that gets gratified from accomplishment. But still, I think that what's the point of that? That, to me, that would be akin to drugs, okay, illicit drugs. Instead of doing that, why don't we really accomplish things that we can't even dream about today? We imagine a future, or we find ourselves in a future where we do those things, and get satisfaction out of doing things we can't even imagine today. That's the future I want. You know, not sitting there pushing
a button. And I think that'll be the distinction between say virtual reality fun, which is just, you know, I've got Jessica Simpson coming over to my house every night, versus the Everest game, where, you know, by the time you've reached the end of it, you've actually acquired a skill, a whole set of skills, and you've actually accomplished something that people have worked in the real world for years to be able to accomplish.
Right.
That'll be the distinction, because ultimately, a lot of this kind of stimulation that people could have in a virtual world would be pretty similar to pushing that pleasure button. And I think that the trick will be not to fall into that trap, the trap that Scott Adams calls the holodeck fallacy. He says that the holodeck is actually the last invention that humanity will ever make, because once that happens, we'll all be in there just basically doing the live porn every night, right?
Yeah, the harem.
all progress will cease, and the world will come to an end. But I don't think so. I think Eliezer's got the right idea here. That instead, what we will do is,
we'll all spend 6 months in there. But then we'll decide that maybe there's something else that needs to be done.
6 months in there, and then we'll go, I got to do something else. I got to learn to ride a motorcycle or something. You think about Keanu Reeves in The Matrix, where he's in that full immersion environment where he can just say, I want to learn kung fu, right? You know,
right.
I want to learn how to fly a helicopter. To be able to, in that context, you take that skill on immediately, but there would have to be some component of appreciating the improvement that you've made and the broader perspective of the world that you gain from being able to take something like that on. And I think that if we move towards an idea of fun that involves, you know, those kinds of, what am I looking for here, improvements to our own condition, not just pleasure, but actual growth of who we are, you know, then we've got an open-ended future where I don't think we would ever have to worry about getting bored.
I think that there's perhaps, there's the possibility of a future where, you know, it's almost as if improvement of yourself could actually be the currency of that of an economy at that level. I don't know how better to say it than that. Just to say that, you know, instead of if there is no more scarcity, imagine a world where there's no scarcity. At that point, what do you busy yourself doing? At some point, I guess if you know, self-improvement is basically what's left at that point. So
exactly. Well, when we had Ivan Kerrigan on the show, we were talking about a possible future economy based on credibility.
Right.
And, you know, one of the ways you would achieve credibility, it seems to me, is by continuing to increase your knowledge, to increase what you're capable of. Those would be probably the two major ways you would go about achieving that credibility. And so, yeah, achieving in that world what would be economic viability.
Right. Right. Okay. Well,
so there it is. So have fun, make money, folks. I guess that's what we're saying. you can do them both, and that's what the future holds in store. So speaking of fun, what music do we have to listen to this evening?
Well, the music tonight is from Axe River Boy. Is the name of this guy. The song is Carry On.
Carry On by, is it Axe River Boy?
AXE, as in something to chop down a tree with, Axe River Boy. I think that's an ominous name somehow. I think the axe as in guitar. And
okay,
River Boy as in probably the place he grew up. So
all right, now I'm all right with him now. Okay, so
okay.
Carry on by Axe River Boy. Well, Stephen, it's been what's the word? Fun. Thank you for your contribution this evening. We look forward to reading the show notes on tonight's program. When do you think we'll see those?
Probably tomorrow morning at the latest. I'm going to try to get on it tonight. So any rate, I appreciate those who've contributed in the chat room. It's been pretty funny tonight.
Yeah, it looks like it's getting kind of woolly there in the chat room. I think it's just as well we shut this down. But thank you to all of our friends in the chat room, everyone who listened in. Thanks again, Mike, for running the chat room for us. And to all of you, we look forward to being with you again on the next Fast Forward Radio. Good night.
Ciao.